a bit of a lightning overview of manifolds, vectors, tensors, covectors, etc. And I introduced the Lie derivative and differential forms. What I want to do today is talk about connections and curvature. So this part should be quite familiar because you've already done quite a bit on connections and curvature. But again, I'll be doing it from just a slightly different perspective. And the aim of the game today is to derive the Cartan structural equations. These are ways of calculating connections and curvatures using differential forms. And so hopefully I'll get to the end of that. But if not, we'll finish it off tomorrow. And then you'll see some examples of how this actually works, so using it. As I was saying yesterday, when we want to take derivatives of vectors or tensors, the problem that we have is we want to compare vectors at neighboring points. And so strictly speaking, they're in different vector spaces. So we have to find a way of connecting the different tangent spaces together. So the Lie derivative did that by using a specific vector field. So you used a vector field to sort of drag these tangent spaces from one point to the next. The exterior differentiation did this by acting only on differential forms, which were completely anti-symmetric, and thereby the bit by which things didn't quite work when you took partial derivatives was cancelled off because that was symmetric. A connection, on the other hand, is an additional structure that you put on your manifold, and it's a rule for getting from one tangent space to the next. So each of these individual tangent spaces at different points on the manifold has its own basis of vectors, this basis EA, and the connection tells you how to link those bases together. And so the way I've just said that, talking about how bases are tied together at different points, this leads us to our way of writing the connection. So it's telling us how we take our basis at one point and move it to a basis at another point. So this is our covariant derivative. This is, of course, our basis vector. These are the connection components, so you've already met the gammas. And then these parts are just making sure that the fact you've got a covector and a vector part on the left matching up with the right-hand side. That's another way. That looks like a T, doesn't it? So this is like the formal definition of these connection components. covariant derivative is defined by these three properties. So it's a derivation, so it's got to be Leibnizian, it reduces to D on functions, and it also commutes with contractions. So this is just saying that it's sort of behaving as a derivative. And the gammas are just the form of the connection components that with respect to the particular basis EA. So that might not be a particularly familiar way of looking at the connections, probably not the way that you first saw it. But if you act on a general vector, so you ask what grad of V is in general, then the vector, you can write it in terms of your basis. So this is just the same as saying any vector has a set of components with respect to a given basis. You then use this Leibnizian property. And say, right, so grad of the vector is going to be grad of its components at plus grad of the basis. But then you know that grad has to reduce to D on scalars, and the components are just scalars. And then for the second piece, we simply use what I wrote down over here, make sure I get it right. Sure, if I write below there, anybody's going to be able to see it. Is that sort of at the limit of your vision down there at the bottom? Or can I write one more line? Nope, well, I'll write one more line and you can just grumble if you can't see it and I'll rewrite it, okay? So dv is simply va, b. So all I've done there is written out what this thing on the left is, one of these geometric expressions. You know, it's got a downstairs part, the covector part, which is the grad, and a vector part, which is the V. So on the left hand, the right hand side, we've also got a covector part and a vector part. And the components of this covector and vector part with respect to the bases are the partial derivative of V along the basis directions plus the connection components contracted with the vector components V. So this would be the what I would expect to be the familiar expression that you had done for covariant derivative. And so in practice, when we're doing, yeah, Tom?
And what the comma means.
Right, so the comma is, as I said yesterday, comma was partial differentiation. So in this case, the slight subtlety, which is what I think Callum is driving at here, is that I've put comma B. Whereas normally when you do partial differentiation, you're thinking of it as being more d by dx mu, right? With respect to a local coordinate chart of these components dA. But we're not necessarily in a coordinate basis here. I've been quite careful to use EV rather than coordinates. So what that means is, if I want to do this strictly, what I have to do is add in this, the components of my actual vector basis. So I take, this is what actually defines VA, B. It's the partial derivative along the directions of the basis EB. And if you have to write it down in terms of the things you're used to, which are the partial derivatives with respect to coordinates, then you would have to contract with the actual explicit coordinate components of the Fierbein. So in practice, when we say a covariant derivative of a vector, in practice what we'll do is just write this down here. Yeah?
So on that word, you have the underlying nabla labeled as a covector.
I'm sorry, I've underlined.
The underlying nabla on that word is labeled as a covector.
Yes.
But it seems to be an operator that's turning a vector field into another vector field.
No, in this sense, this is taking a vector and it's giving you a mixed object. It's giving you a 1-1 tensor. So if you were writing it in terms of indices, you would have one index upstairs corresponding to the vector part, and one index downstairs corresponding to the covector part.
So is my impression that a covector is something that takes in a vector and turns it into a function?
Yes. So if you took, so what you could do here, this object here has the ability to map a vector to a vector, because it would, the covector part of it would act on the vector, giving you the number, but you'd still be left over with the vector part of it here. I personally find this easier to do if I mentally carry sort of little index slots along with it. That's why I think when we do practical calculations, we always tend to do it with indices, because in practice, it's actually easier to keep tabs on what is going on.
So the underlying nabla, that by itself is a covector?
Yes. Okay. It's just that, of course, it's not really by itself, right? It's always acting on something.
Well, if it's a covector, it really can be by itself. That's what I'm asking.
No, it's an operator.
So it's not a, okay.
It's an operator, but it's an operator which is adding, if you like, a covector.
Adding a covector.
Yeah, so it's adding a covector part. So it's, you know, to whatever object you're acting on. So it would take a covector to a cotensor, you know, and so on and so forth. So I mean, it's to think of it as a covector in the sense of it's not carrying a vector index. It is actually carrying, you know, it is adding one of these covector features. So this particular discussion doesn't actually at this point require a metric. You can link together your tangent spaces without specifying what your underlying distance function is. But of course, in general relativity, what we do is we say we want to have a connection that makes sense. We want to have a concept of parallel transport, where if we connect our tangent spaces together, it is what we would physically expect, in the sense that our angles would remain constant, like as we moved along from one tangent space to the next. So what do we mean by that? Well, for the metric connection has two properties, the first of which is that the covariant derivative of the metric vanishes, so the metric is covariantly constant. So although the covariant derivative along a vector of another vector equaling zero is the definition of parallel transport with respect to the underlying connection, if you take the metric connection, then this really does correspond to what our intuition would say was parallel transport. And the reason being that the metric, of course, tells us about angles as well as distances.
So what is delta nabla t?
So this is just a, this is the covariant derivative. This would be, if you like, t dot ground. In the sense of you're using, this is this business of using the covector to map the vector onto a scalar. So, I mean, what we're using here is this idea that, you know, cos of theta uv is the dot product, so this would be the equivalent of the dot product of u and v divided by the length of u and the length of v. So if our metric is covariantly constant and we are taking a vector and transporting it along a curve to which t is a tangent, then if the derivative, the covariant derivative of that vector is zero, then it's saying that the angle that v makes with the curve is going to remain invariant. So that's parallel transport. It's what we mean intuitively by parallel transport. So there's one other condition that we have. In GR, we take what's known as a torsion-free connection. So the torsion of the connection, it's essentially the anti-symmetric part. So we say that as long as our, this is saying that the connection is essentially symmetric. So to tell you what those C's are. So if you actually put in your basis vectors into that definition of torsion, the first two terms will give you the gamma, the connection components, and all you've done between the first two terms is swap the order of U and V. So that swaps the order of the bottom components. The final term is coming from this Lie bracket, and it's saying that if you take a general basis, you're not guaranteed that the commutator of the basis vectors vanishes. And these coefficients, the C's, are called the structure constants of the basis. So if you ask for these two conditions, that there's no torsion and that the metric is covariantly conserved, this gives you a unique connection, and that's the one that you will have already met. So that's just redoing the connection, which you've already done with Rob Myers, but also showing how you can derive this or approach it from the point of view of, you know, top down, in the sense of taking the manifold and gradually applying more and more structure. And then finally, for gravity, we use the metric connection. Well, I mean, it's corresponding,
Funny, there's a physical way to see. I mean, like, that if the angles are same.
No, well, I mean, people do play around with having torsion.
It's just an added complication, though.
But it's an extra field, sort of an extra degree of freedom. I mean, I suppose, in a sense, it's nice to take a minimalist approach. You have a theory of gravity, and all, you know, in terms of matching with Newtonian theory, and all we really need is an isometric connection. Right, so what I'd like to do is to just now derive an alternative way of computing these connection coefficients. So when you want to calculate, it's often necessary to know what the connection components are for a particular metric. You may be wanting to find geodesics. You might be wanting to calculate a wave operator on some particular curved space-time. You might want to solve the equation of motion for a scalar field, for example, in which case you need to compute these gammas. Now, if you're just computing gammas, as long as your metric isn't too bad, it's probably not too big a task to actually just sit down and work out what they are, because all you're summing over is a single index here. So it's just sort of one index that you're summing over. So usually it's quite hard to go wrong. But if you've got a slightly more complicated metric, or certainly by the time you're coming to compute the Riemann curvature, sort of doing it from this explicit expression, you know, this formula and the formula for the Riemann tensor, starts to get a little bit more involved and certainly can be quite a daunting task. I must have done it once, but I don't remember by now. So what I want to do now is to introduce the Cartan structural equations, Cartan formalism, which is a different way of calculating curvatures. So what we do is we take the connection components. The first index on the gamma is always the one that you're doing the differentiation with respect to. And so what we do is we mop that up with one of the basis forms to make this into a one form. So these are the connection one forms. You might sometimes, in fact, see them written as omega. Make sure you can read it, AB. So sometimes you see it as an omega rather than a theta. So that's an alternative piece of notation. So what this is doing is just, at the moment, it's not actually doing anything at all. It's just simply taking our connection and absorbing one of the indices and making it into a geometric object. So then the first thing that we can say about these connection one forms is that the symmetric part of them is actually the exterior derivative of the metric components. So I'm now fixed on the metric connection. So just to show this, if you want to prove just for the sake of it, if I look at what the exterior derivative is of GAB, the components of G, then the components of G are found by using the basis vectors to pick out contracting G with two basis vectors to pick out the A and B components. I then use the fact that on a scalar, the exterior derivative and the covariant derivative are the same. I then use the fact that the covariant derivative commutes with contractions to pull it inside, and that the metric is covariantly constant to take it through and make it act just on the E's. And then I can use the expression for the covariant derivative of the basis vector. That just tells me the covariant derivative of the basis vector is the connection one form contracted with a basis vector. And this is simply GCB theta CA plus GAC theta CB. So it's nothing too dramatic. It's just a straightforward application of the rules of covariant differentiation. So what this relation is telling me here is that if we are in an orthonormal basis, then G is just eta. It's just plus or minus 1. So if I take a derivative of plus or minus 1, I just get 0. And so in an orthonormal basis, the connection one forms are skew symmetric. And then finally, I can take that, sorry, yes?
So GAC is a two tensor. DGAC, I think.
No, G is not. It's a set of scalars. This is this geometric notation. So GAC are the components of the metric in the basis. So it is written, this is the rank 2 tensor here, cotensor. And to get the basis, the actual components, I contract it with 2 basis vectors. So if you remember when I wrote down on that board near the beginning the expression for the covariant derivative of the general vector, I wrote the general vector in terms of its components with respect to the particular basis, E, EA. And so when I took the derivative, I split out the derivative of the components, V, and the derivative of the basis. The components are scalars, and so they just get acted on as with D. And it's the actual vectors, the basis vectors, that got the gammas.
Part. Mm-hmm. Sorry, just how do you pick up the thetas from that expression?
Because at this point, well, it's coming from this grad EA. Remember that when I first introduced grad EA, I said that this was equal to gamma A B C E C tensor omega B. So this part, the gamma and the omega, is the theta.
Okay, yeah.
That gives me my theta, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm picking up the connection because I'm taking a covariant derivative of basis vectors in here, and so that's where the connection forms get come from. So finally, what I want to do is to just use the identity that I wrote down at the end of yesterday's lecture to get a relation between these connection components and the derivative of the basis for the covector, cotangent space. So let me start off by just looking at this object, theta cross, that's this wedge product, crossed with an element of the basis of the cotangent space. So I've just written in explicitly what one of these connection one forms is. But now when I look at my right-hand side, here I've got omega B wedge omega C, and this is just simply omega b tensor omega c minus omega c tensor omega b. So it's skew symmetric on b and c. So I could completely equivalently take the anti-symmetric part of the gamma. But then I'm going to relate that to the torsion tensor, which I'll eventually remove for the moment. So if I define my torsion 2 form in the following way, (clears then my first term just simply becomes this torsion, which we know is zero for our metric connection, Einstein connection. Out of space here. So the second term, I've still got it written up there, simply replaces the structure constants by their explicit expression. I then use the identity that I wrote down yesterday. So this, if I rearrange this, then what I get is what's known as Cartan's first structural equation. And since we know our connection is torsion-free, what it's telling us is if we take our basis of one forms on the manifold, we take the exterior derivative of those one forms, it's going to tell us exactly what the connection is. So the reason why that's useful is it's often an awful lot easier to just take D of something than it is to sort of sit there and keep track of a whole lot of indices, especially if you're in 10 dimensions and not 4. Right, so that was all I wanted to say on connections. So I'd like to remind you about curvature. It's gone because, just like here, where you're taking the actual components and changing them into the geometric object, there's a half here because you've got omega b cross omega c, you've got a two form, and it's the same here, this is a two form, because it's got d omega, okay? So these are the components of this two form. So it's a half components of the two form, omega b cross omega c, just like that there.
But why if there's a half going? I don't know.
It goes. It's if you. So what if you want to rewrite? When you're actually writing out forms in general, you sort of have for a P form, it's just a general combinatorial factor. If you want to just check it, just think of it in terms of your two form with F mu nu, the electromagnetic stress tensor. You would then write that the two form F would be equal to a half FAB omega A cross omega B, and then you know what FAB actually is, so because I've said that yesterday, it's DAAB minus DBAA, and then you've got omega A cross omega B. It's basically because this thing this thing has, this is omega A, omega B minus omega B, omega A with no normalization. It's sort of to get the counting straight when with the definition of the wedge product. So just to I want to just draw an analogy here with gauge theory. If we're doing gauge theory, we need to introduce a gauge potential when we make a symmetry local in order that the derivative of your field transforms covariantly under gauge transformations. Should be a symmetry local, I think, not a local symmetry. So you're used to this from gauge theory. You write down your derivative of your scalar field, and you have to add in a gauge piece so that your whole the derivative of your scalar is invariant under gauge transformation. So you can think carry along in the back of your mind the fact that we do the same thing with vectors. So our gamma is sort of playing the same role as a gauge potential. And so, for example, the field strength of our gauge field is given by a commutator of derivatives acting on the scalar. So that's how we define our field strength. Did I mean minus or do I mean plus? So that's what we do when we're doing gauge theory. And in gravity, we do something pretty much the same. So we take the sort of equivalent of a commutator of derivatives. And so you see there's a very analogous structure here. We've got a reversed order, sort of derivatives. And we've also got something which is a commutator here. the covariant derivative with respect to U commutator V. So if I write it out explicitly in terms of components, in other words, if I take basis vectors EC, ED, and EB for my U, V, and W, what I will get is the expression that should be familiar from the core GR course. And once again, the only thing that you may not have seen there before are the structure constants. And that's just, again, taking account of the fact that in a general basis, you can have extra terms lying around because the commutator of the basis vectors might not vanish. In a coordinate basis, that last term would not be there. So that should be what you remember. Yep.
So what actually came first, the one with the gauge field or the curvature in gravity?
Well, I mean, this is really Riemannian geometry. So I would guess that the Riemannian geometry came first.
Yes.
I'm a bit rusty on my history and my dates, but I'm pretty sure that when Maxwell wrote down his equations, he didn't use four vector notation, so that took till Einstein to come up. Whereas your Riemannian geometry would be what, late 19th century? Does anybody remember dates?
The Cartan approach is much more recent.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The first part of the 20th century.
Right, but I mean, I'm saying just
terms
of the Riemann tensor and the fact that it's, how it's defined as the commutator. Well, as I say, this way of writing.
That's Ricci identity is due to Ricci, right? Because that's
the Riemann identity, yeah.
It's the covariant derivative of the commutator equals to Riemann, that's a Ricci identity, so it's only Ricci.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, the interpretation of it, or the analogy with gauge theory is very definitely a modern analogy. So, so it's just a good idea to remind ourselves about what actually curvature tells us about. So I've done, before just doing one final piece of formalism, I'll just... We've finally got to an object that is telling us something about the world around us, whereas connections are just something which depends on your choice of basis. So what Einstein did when he introduced general relativity is he was saying that acceleration per se was not necessarily something that had some absolute meaning. So although we think of acceleration as being associated with a force, and we would imagine forces to have some absolute meaning, the whole point about general relativity was it was saying that at least over a short period of time, we couldn't tell if we were sitting in a gravitational field like we are now, or if we were in a rocket in space accelerating. And the only way we know about the difference is if we watch over a period of time. In other words, we pick up information about tidal forces. So, although you may well have seen this, perhaps you haven't seen it quite in this way, if I imagine a set of geodesics with tangent vector t, and I'm going to parameterize them affinely, just for the sake of argument, so that grad t of t is 0. So this is my t parameter going along the geodesics. And then I'm going to label my geodesics with another parameter s. And I'm going to say, that my vector n is defined as d by ds. So by construction, the Lie bracket of t and n vanishes because I am going to define this is my s parameter all occurs at the same value of t. And the along a curve, s is constant. So you can see that if I go a little bit along n, a little distance s along n, and then a distance t along t, it's the same as going a distance t along t and s along n. So that tells me the Lie bracket vanishes. So if I put this in the definition of the Riemann tensor, I've got my the commutator of n and t vanishes. So I've just got grad nt minus grad tn. Sorry, grad t grad n. So I'm just reversing the order of derivatives. But I know grad t of t vanishes. So this is simply minus grad t grad n of t. But then the Lie bracket vanishes, so that's minus grad t of n. But this object here is just like d squared by dt squared. It's just the acceleration of n. So this is telling me that along these curves, if the Riemann tensor is not zero, or more strictly, if you contract with t on the second and fourth index, and that's not zero, what that's telling you is that this vector n will change, which is telling you that geodesics will either be squeezed together or forced apart. This is saying that, so this is the covariant derivative, right? So it's using covariant differentiation. So it would be the equivalent, if you were doing Lagrangian mechanics, of the difference between little d by dt, where you were just taking the sort of partial derivative with respect to the explicit coordinate time t, and including all the other variation that can happen. So it was meant, you know, in writing this down, I'm trying to simply to get to the interpretation, which is essentially saying this is really the acceleration, this expression here. It's the acceleration or the rate of change of n, telling you that n is growing or shrinking. So that is what curvature is. It's telling us about tidal forces. And tidal forces are, of course, what are the real defining properties of gravity. So just to finish off, this is what we'll start with tomorrow. Cartan's second structural equation. I derived the first structural equation earlier, which related torsion to the exterior derivative of the basis of forms. The second structural equation calculates curvature for you by taking derivatives of the connection one forms. And this expression here is much more like the expression you get for the gauge covariant derivative. D of gauge potential, commutator of gauge potential. Okay.
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand what the difference is between T and N. If T is the tangent vector to the geodesic, then isn't it also the derivative along the geodesic?
No, T, sorry.
So T is the tangent vector along the geodesic, so isn't it? Doesn't that mean that it's the derivative along the geodesic?
No, because it's a vector. Sorry. So, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Perhaps we should just take it offline. Yeah.